Movements to revitalize Native American languages have been popping up across the U.S. in recent years. Tribes from Massachusetts to California are using federal funding to help preserve their native tongues. The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma has even developed Cherokee language versions of Google, Wikipedia, and Facebook. Lansing State Journal reporter Kathleen Levy recently profiled the efforts of one Michigan tribe to revitalize the Anishinaabe language by teaching it to its youngest members. Preschoolers from the Saginaw Chippewa tribe in Mount Pleasant can attend a language immersion program where everything they hear, read, and write is in their native tongue. But work to revive the language isn't limited to the Isabella Indian Reservation. It's happening all over the state. And joining us to talk about the revitalization of native languages in Michigan is Helen Roy. She's a member of the Odawa tribe and has taught Anishinaabe Mullen to students across the state, including here at MSU. Helen, welcome to Current State.
Thank you.
We appreciate you being with us today. And first of all, what are tribes in Michigan doing to try and combat the loss of their native language?
Well, there's a formation of classes coming up all over the place. And with that, of course, you have to have a teacher to do it. And most times, there are not many teachers out there to teach the language. But we're finding them, you know, and most of the teachers now are mostly from Ontario that are teaching the language in Michigan. And most of the people at Mount Pleasant are Canadian, Ontario, you know, from where I come from. I know all of them.
Are there many fluent Anishinaabe Mullen speakers left in the state?
Within the Native communities, you find maybe, I say, a handful, and, you know, meaning five or less, and sometimes only as little as maybe one per community.
Wow. Okay.
And, yet, you know, those older people that I'm talking about, those handful of people, they might still remember the language, but because you don't, you know, can't speak to everybody, other people... In the language, we forget.
Sure.
People forget.
Sure.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what has contributed to the decline of Indigenous languages in the U.S. and Canada?
I suppose the decline started as soon as the first contact from, you know, outside of North America came. That's when it, you know, I would say that it first started, because then English, you know, we started speaking English. Indian people started speaking English. And then the residential schools, boarding schools, the children were taken. And as far back as I can remember, when I went to residential school in Ontario, my grandmother told me, you know, that she went. And when she was only 5 years old, so, you know, these schools started up long, long, long time ago. And with that, language loss happened. You know, the kids were forbidden to speak the language. So that's kind of like where the decline started. And then because English was the only language spoken in the home later on, then, of course, the language, native languages were not spoken anymore. So that's, you know, kind of like in a... You know, nutshell, the decline over a span of centuries.
Some really, really awful stories about those boarding schools. And you grew up in Ontario on Manitoulin Island and actually attended a boarding school yourself. What was that experience like for you when you were there?
Well, for myself, it was not as... like the stories that you hear, because for myself, being the older of the four of us girls that were taken to the school, you know, when I look back at that time I, you know, entered the school, and coming from a poor family, you know, and not having, we slept together, you know, four or five of us in one bed.
Mm-hmm.
So upon entering the residential school, you know, I find myself, hey, I have my own bed, I have blankets, I even have a pillow, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And, you know, It was different. It was kind of like a hotel stay in today's world.
Wow.
You know.
So in your case, it was actually maybe a little bit better than what had been going on.
Yeah. And I guess if I had known, although when I left to go to the school that time, my grandmother said in the language, which is, don't let anybody take what's yours. And I said, okay, you know, and spoke to her, replied back to her in the language, I won't let anybody take what's mine, you know, clinging on to my bag, you know. And but little did I know that she, you know, she was talking about the language. And I guess deep down inside, I did listen because I still speak my language, although with all the beatings that I got for speaking, the only language that I knew, really, you know.
You did then get beatings for speaking the language that you were raised with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was like, you know, how do you forbid somebody to speak the only language they know? Basically, when you're young, you're 8 to 9 years old, 7 years old, and some of my younger sisters that went with me, that's all they knew, you know.
Sure.
And you know, to forbid somebody to speak, it's like telling a child today, born, don't speak yet until you're 5 years old, basically, until we teach you English or whatever it is happens to be.
Well, and it seems like they're knowing now that kids acquire language at such a young age, that acquiring it at that age and keep it is really necessary to keep it throughout your life. I mean, while you were away at the school, I mean, is your internal language when thoughts come into your head, is it Anishinaabemowin or is it English now?
It is still Anishinaabemowin because that's the way that my thinking process is like you said, you know, at a very young age you acquire this way of thinking, and that's the way you think all the time.
Right.
You know, and so when I started teaching, I used to tell my students, you know, I wish you really knew what I was seeing in you know, the words that I speak. And they used to ask me, well, can you tell us? So that's kind of when I started, you know, breaking down the language into the very smallest part, which is every sound in a word.
Right.
And explaining what those sounds mean. And that's the way that I understand it. You know, that's the way that I see things. Everything that I see that's happening, everything that I see is an action. Even if I look at something, I you know, see what it, how it comes together. And so it's all action.
Just quickly, what are some of the challenges, or maybe the biggest challenge, in teaching this language to people who've grown up speaking English?
The biggest challenge is I don't know how to say it. It's changing that English thinking. It's to take away that English thinking because the Anishinaabe words that we speak are so much more. Because of those sounds, every sound is its own action, is its own sentence. So if you have a five-letter word, you have like basically five ideas and concepts that somebody thinks about as they say that one word. So the biggest challenge is probably tearing down that English wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right. Right.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's important for Native people to retain their languages?
Well, as the Anishinaabe people, you know, we have to have our language to have that completeness, that identity. You know, as I look around sometimes, you know, I go to the stores and I see people from China and a whole family and the little kids are speaking their language. And I go to, I see another family, Hispanic family, and I see the kids speaking their language. And then I see Anishinaabe people, and unfortunately, I hear English.
Mm-hmm.
And So we need to get back to that. You know, here we are, Anishinaabe people, we should be speaking the language that was given to us.
Helen Roy, thank you so much for joining us. Helen Roy teaches Anishinaabemowin around Michigan, and we thank you for being on Current State today.
All right. Thank you for having me. Thank you.